and to know others. And I feel blessed by the knowledge that so many of us are moving in this direction. When Spirit arranged this class, it reached out. It took each individual who was ready to listen with a different capacity than the mind and bring them to one place where truth could be spoken without any form of compromise, without even trying to pre-digest the truth to make it bite-sized and easy to assimilate. Whoever is here because the Spirit felt you are ready to make the supreme sacrifice of laying down your life. And picking up your immaculate life as the infinite Son of God. Now when the transformation begins, when you realize that something's happening here, I'm becoming different, I'm losing certain mortal qualities, there's something going on right under my nose. When you know that, and when you can define it, and when you realize that you're being transformed by your own soul, you will know that every sacrifice you have made to reach that point was something you would do over and over and over a million times faster if you had but known it at an earlier period of your awareness. Our third day one mind produces this living substance. One mind. Now let's see what happens here. As a human, you have a mind. I suspect you will grant that God has a mind. And so you have one and God has one. That's two minds. And you use your mind. And so you're in a state of living with two minds, your mind and God's mind. And obviously, you're going to run into some problems. Because you're going to think finitely. You're going to think all within this lifespan. You're going to try to make something big out of it. Or at least get comfortable, secure. Now, that second mind is one too many. But the soul unites your mind with the divine mind. And so the magic pipeline from divine consciousness through to your mind makes one mind or one consciousness. And it's that one consciousness which you should strive for, in which your mind is the mind of the Father. And therefore, everything happening in the consciousness of God that is necessary for your development automatically comes through the magic pipeline to your mind. Divine thoughts become your thoughts. The world mind relay station has nothing to work through you because your mind is attuned to the infinite. Now, when there's one mind in that day, you are allowing the infinite to weave its substance, which will transform you. Third day, there is one mind. And if I live in that one mind today, I will receive true substance, I will receive divine thought. Now, how do you get to this one mind when you wake up in the morning? If you had two toys and you wanted to get to one toy, how would you do it? You'd simply get rid of one toy. And if you want to get to one mind, you're not going to get rid of gods. Now, how do you get rid of one mind too many? Take no thought? Isn't that a nice method? Take no thought. You don't have to go in with a scalpel, cut out the brain, and throw it in some acid tank. You just take no thought. And so it will become a receiver rather than a creative thinker. And now this mind, being what we would call alertly dormant, if you don't mind that phrase, is there waiting, listening, but it is not making decisions. It's becoming your servant, not your boss. It's waiting. It's listening. And you've transferred your focus now from this mind. What keeps the mind active? So that it refuses to be still. I've never met a student who didn't have trouble with a still mind. But what makes the mind refuse to be still? We think it's uncontrollable. It's just, I don't know what to do about it. Not only is it controllable, but you are going to control it very well. First of all, the mind has desires. And as long as it has these desires, it's going to be active. In some way, it's planning how to fulfill those desires. The mind is thinking because it wants something. That's why it thinks. Or there's something it doesn't want. The fact that your mind refuses to be still is its way of rejecting the demand that it be still. It's being very actively telling you, I don't want to be still, I want to have control here. And so there's a quality in you that has to convince your mind to release its control, its need to run things, its need to express itself. You see, we associate our own self and our mind as one and the same. We think my mind is really me. My mind is where I enjoy life. My mind is where I make these great plans. Without my mind, where would I be? I'd be an animal. But the truth is that without our soul, we are the very thing we fear. Your mind, when it is devoid of desire, will have nothing to plan about. And when it knows that what it desires in this world is without substance, it will stop desiring. It is not a stupid mind. It simply has to be educated that what it desires in this world is not permanent, not of the Father, not in the kingdom. And what it desires in this world, it can never take with it. When the mind knows that what it desires is only a substitute and an imitation, And when it knows there is something of a higher and truer and more real nature, it will desire that. And when it desires that, it will be still. Because it will know that I cannot get that through my mind, but only through the stillness of my mind. So step number one in quieting your mind is try to understand your conscious and subconscious desires. You've got a lot of them. So many. And they're all about this world. When you release yourself from desire, maybe 3/4 of the mind activity will abate. I guess fear would have to be another active quality of the mind. A certain strange kind of fear, like if I don't keep my eyes open, somebody is going to get the best of me. And so this fear, this caution, this suspicion causes a state of constant unrest. Always looking to be sure that someone doesn't do something you disapprove of, or do it to you, or even move an object in the room to another place in the room. Always this mind is active, patrolling its territory. When it knows that it has no territory, that it's looking at an illusion everywhere, again, it will not have to think. It will not have to protect its territory. And you'll find many other tricks in that mind which refuses to be still. And once you rob it of its territory, which is the world of illusion, and stand above it, knowing that all of this world is illusion, including all the gold in Fort Knox. You will take the fangs out of this serpent, this thinking mind. Place not your faith in the things of this earth that perish. That wisdom becomes clear. We have been working for the things that perish with our minds. When the wisdom of working for the things that are imperishable comes to you, you will find you change instruments from mind to soul, and the mind is still. Work with yourself so that your goals are clearer. If you have human goals, the mind will stay active. If you have divine goals, the mind will be still. So that's the basic idea in your meditation. If you are unable to control the mind, it is because the mind still has human goals. When you have divine goals, the mind will be still. Find out what those human goals are, and find the real thing behind those human goals, and let that be your target. Then accept it as present, because everything the foolish mind seeks is already present in your soul on a higher level of reality than your mind is capable of. There's more gold in your soul than all that Fort Knox has. It's the source of all gold. And if gold were needed, it could manufacture all it needs. It's the source of all life, and so it manufactures life. All that your mind seeks in this world is multiplied beyond belief in the reality within your soul. When your mind knows this, it will not interfere with your meditations. Take that into a meditation. If I have human goals, I'm going to have an active mind. When the mind is still, you're in the soul. The soul replaces it automatically when your mind is still. You don't have to do anything. Soul comes into play in the stillness of the mind. And then soul performs that great miracle of conscious union with the infinite invisible. And the infinite consciousness and your mind are wedded in oneness, and there is one mind flowing with divine thought. And that thought translates into a transformed world. That's all that grace ever was about. The divine mind functioning without the interference of your mind. Because when your mind is still, the carnal mind being helpless, there is no dilution, there is no filtering of divine thought down to human fragments. The fullness flows and transforms your world. The right home, the right marriage, the right body, the right health, the right everything. Plus 5 million treasures that the human mind in its fondest dreams could not conceive of. Grace is a permanent dispensation of the one consciousness, the one mind. If you're not in the state of grace, you've got an active mind which is interfering with the natural state of grace which is normal to the Son of God. Another way to silence the mind is to accept the Sonship of God as your identity. And follow through with the knowledge that the Son of God, which you accept yourself to be, does not have a human mind. Don't try to saddle the Divine Son with a human mind. And so, because you are the Son of God, the human mind is an anachronism. It's outmoded. It doesn't fit your identity. Let it be still. Let the mind be silent before the Lord. Let that stillness become a state of pregnancy. Christ be born in the permanent stillness of your mind. We often forget that soul is a marvelous thinker, a far better thinking instrument than our mind. And then we learn that our mind never was a mind at all. It was an imitation mind. It was the cosmic hypnosis presenting us with our belief in a mind that was not a mind. It was a decoy. The only one capable of thinking divine thought is your soul. The mind is intended to be a receiver for your soul, not an original thinker. It must be meek unto your soul. Then it will execute in the mortal sense of life all those directions that are given to it from above. And as above, so below, oneness will express directly from the highest to this world. I don't know too many people who are living under divine guidance in the pure sense. But probably among our students, there is a higher percentage of those who can live in the soul than you would get in a cross-section of people walking on the street. And so our lives should be demonstrating this higher awareness, this higher acceptance of divine thought. We should be showing forth many fruits, but we have this long corridor in which to still make our journey to soul, to spirit, to Christ, divine life. And the success of it depends on accepting it all where you are, because that's what makes the journey possible. The journey is only possible when you know you already are it. The mind rejects that. And so one mind is your third day. You may have to work a little longer that morning, so get up about 10 minutes earlier. One mind, when you achieve a measure of it, you have found the master alchemist. Let's go into the fourth day now. You can only do this when you have taught the mind to be still. The fourth day you awaken to the knowledge and to the determination that I accept no external world. Now there are many subtleties to that. It doesn't mean go back to sleep. It means with your inner eye to walk through I'm glad I didn't say that. It means that we walk through the kingdom of God rather than the world. I accept no external world today. Okay? And on the other side of the coin, I accept only the presence of the invisible kingdom. I am walking in the invisible kingdom. I'll do all my chores, but I will know that what is happening out there is the carnal mind's picture within myself. And I will try to live in the one mind, which will perceive the reality behind this that I am doing. It's almost similar to the way the bride seeks the bridegroom, not in the visible, but looks through the visible to find the spirit, to find the bridegroom. And if you want the bridegroom strongly enough, you will look through the visible to the invisible. Similarly here, if you know that by living in the conscious knowledge that there is no external world and not being willing to accept it, you automatically find yourself looking through the world into the spirit. And to a measure, no doubt, finding what you're looking for. Because when you're looking for it, the law is that it looks for you. It finds you when you're looking for it. Like the son returning home and the father runs out to meet him. Let's see how we can live then, momentarily, in the knowledge that there is no external world. Some of you have the capacity to test that this afternoon, if you feel that that's what you'd like to do. You can do most anything in this world and still test this principle. I accept no external world. One young man said to me, why did you have a seminar in Orlando, of all places, where there is so many human things to do? And I knew what the seminar was about, and I was thinking, just the perfect place to practice there's no external world. It's a lot harder here. We'll go on to the fifth. Just want to coin the phrase, if you don't mind. Today I will walk in soul heaven. That'll be the fifth day. Soul heaven. Now it can be Orlando or Bethlehem. It can be this world or soul heaven. It's where you're at that determines it. And it's where you're at that determines every tomorrow. So that's your choice on the fifth day. On the fourth, I accepted no external world. I tried to walk in the kingdom. And now to clarify that, just what the kingdom really is in functional ways, we'll call it that heaven which enters your soul. Through your soul, you discover the heaven that mankind is waiting for. Right here. You discover the kingdom that the world has been told they will enter if they're good little boys and do everything that they're told to do. course, there's nobody later to tell them, I'm sorry, I was wrong. It's too late. But the heaven we've been waiting for is right here in your soul. And I challenge anyone on this earth to dispute it. In your soul is heaven. And in your soul is Christ. And in your soul is paradise. And if you ever wanted the baubles of this world, it would be very discouraging to learn that you had turned your back on the heaven that is in your soul. There's no one in this class is going to walk out of this class without that knowledge. Heaven is in my soul. The paradise I seek is in my soul. The supply I seek is in my soul. The absence of limitations is in my soul. Why are you told that everything you seek you are? Because everything is in your soul and you are your soul. Now the carnal mind can paint beautiful and lurid pictures of marvelous things on this earth. But the same carnal mind that creates destroys. The same things that appear through carnal mind disappear. The life you're given through carnal mind is taken away. There's only one Savior. God functioning through your soul. And in your soul, the birth of Christ puts heaven into total expression in all that you do. All of the negatives, all of the opposites, all of the good health and the bad health, all of the rumors that turn into tumors, all of the hysteria, all of the fear, all of the greed and the hate and the need and the despair are banished by the birth of Christ in your soul. That's where heaven is. Who wants lesser? To be satisfied with less than God is suicide. Soul or perish, soul or reincarnation, soul or limitation, soul or death. Is that clear? If you disagree with it, think about it again and again and again until you can say, I see, my soul is my Savior. And your soul is always you. Your right identification. Then soul will take you to your spirit. Soul will take you to Christ life. And all will be realized to be yourself. Your future does not lie in a million tomorrows. It lies in your soul right here. So try to live in it. And on that fifth day, if you have the experience of your soul heaven, you will know that soul heaven and the kingdom are one and the same. But soul is the instrument through which you live in that kingdom. The seamless robe on the cross comes to mind. It was the symbol of the invisible body of the soul. It could not be divided, just as your spirit cannot be divided. When you are clothed in the body of spirit, you're wearing the seamless robe. And it's all available through your soul consciousness. Every minute that you're in it, you're not in carnal mind. And every minute that you're in it, you're not dying in carnal mind. You're in that which is imperishable. Those are the five steps for that. I think that brings us into 30 principles. There might be a degree of redundancy, but they're all just slightly different so that even the repetitions are not identical. And they give you another way of coming at the ultimate truth of your perfect identity now. I know that Monday morning will be a difficult time for some, and tonight I'll ask you what time you'd like to meet Monday. I think it's down rather early, but some may feel they'd even like it earlier. We'll go by the majority. So what I'll do is just sort of call out a time and a few times, and wherever we see the most people want to meet on Monday, that's the time we'll meet. We'll all be considerate of those who have planes to catch. The question is, how early do we meet? As far as I'm concerned, if you want to meet before breakfast, I'll be here. But we'll decide together, and I'll ask you tonight. Whatever we may have to say still will be said tonight and tomorrow morning. Have a beautiful day in your soul heaven.